Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. You're listening to a new The Changemaking Podcast with Chloe Mestoghi. Each episode will introduce an area of technology that needs work and highlight the changemakers working on it. Join Chloe and guests as they tap into their passion about equity and rights for all. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another ITSP Magazine's The Changemaking Podcast. And with me today, I have Kim Crowley, who's a cybersecurity researcher and writer. And today we're going to talk about her new book that is coming out, a hard copy, on October 5th. But the ebook is already out, called 8 Steps to a Better Security. Welcome, Kim, and thank you for being on the podcast today.
It's a real honor, and it's great to speak with you again, Chloe.
It's always an honor to have you. So let's first talk about a little bit about your background. Do you mind sharing with the people a little bit about yourself and such as your background? How did you get in cybersecurity, InfoSec, and the hacker community?
Sure. I was interested in computers ever since I was a little girl. My dad encouraged my interest in computers. I would fix his various technical issues with his home PC back in the early 90s. So he was also a novelist. So I grew up with the idea that people could write for a living. So that was a major advantage. Like everything that my dad taught me about commercial wordcraft and being encouraged to explore computer technology. And I don't think anyone involved knew the career that was building up to. So fast forward about 15, 20 years from there or so, I've been blogging for like a large number of tech companies over the years. I'm not even scratching the surface of all of them, but the more notable ones are Sophos Naked Security, AT&T Cybersecurity, Venafi, BlackBerry Silence. And I wrote about, you know, cyber attacks and newly discovered vulnerabilities and policy matters and you name it. So I did that for a good number of years. I worked with a lot of great tech brands. And then early last year, your friend and mine, Phil Wiley, pen tester extraordinaire, he told me that he was working on a book with Wiley and he didn't have time to finish it on his own. He had it half written at that point. It was titled The Pentester Blueprint. And I told him I would be honored to help him see that project to fruition. So it's based on the Pentester Blueprint talks that he's been giving at cybersecurity events for at least a few years now on how to become a pen tester, because that's a rapidly growing field and people often don't know where they start with that, you know, simulating cyber attacks for a living. So working with Phil was an absolutely wonderful experience. We both know very well that he's one of the nicest guys in the industry. So it was really great working with him. And writing half of that book gave me the confidence to work on a book on my own. So when that project was done, I was speaking with Jim Minutel at Wiley and I gave him 5 more pitches and he said yes to 2 of them. So the first of the pitches that Jim said yes to, I started working on in January. And that was for 8 Steps to Better Security. And we were done editing by about July or so. And, you know, a few weeks ago, to my surprise, just a couple of weeks after we were done the finishing editing phases, the ebook just appeared. So the ebook is available on Google Play, probably Apple Books, and Amazon Kindle, obviously. And yeah, October 5th, the paperback will be out everywhere where books like that are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you name it. The audiobook will be coming out, I expect, either the end of this year or the beginning of 2022. So yeah, and I feel very strongly that 8 Steps fulfills a void that we have in the market, because there are lots of absolutely stellar books on various aspects of business cybersecurity. But there wasn't really a book that was a solid foundational, this is business cybersecurity 101. So the advice in 8 Steps, you can find in like at least 30, 40, 50 other books. But you know, someone running a business who has no idea where to start when it comes to improving the security posture of their organization would have to buy and read like 30, 40, 50 other books to get the basic starter advice that's all contained in this book. So I know it's easier to digest information when you break something up into more digestible steps. I'm ADHD, so I really value organizing information in a way that's accessible and not overwhelming. So each of those 8 steps pertains to a different facet of business cybersecurity. And then, because there's no way that everything that a business needs to know about the topic can be contained in one, you know, 217-page book. So chapter 9 goes into books that I recommend so that readers can explore each of the topics I covered in the book in greater detail. But this book is intended to be the starting point. This is how you can get going.
Excellent. So let's start diving into the steps then. What is the first step that you share?
The first step is fostering a strong security culture. Culture is what a collective, what a group of people do as a matter of habit and how they influence each other. So if people's habits are supportive of their security posture, then everything becomes so much easier. And that doesn't just pertain to, you know, IT staff. It pertains to everyone in the organization, because everyone has some sort of connection to the business's information systems. So it includes everyone in your IT department. It includes everyone who uses endpoints in your network. It includes security guards and receptionists and customer service agents. You know, customer service agents are often, you know, socially engineered to reveal sensitive authentication data and stuff like that. So everyone must be included in a strong security culture. So that was the first step, really, is because if people's attitudes are not supportive for, you know, a strong security posture, then everything gets so much more difficult. You got to start with people's attitudes and training and having the right mindset.
I think that's very valid and true, especially when you hear of companies where you'll have like one team member or two team members that are throwing people under a bus for their own issues, but also creating some sort of drama of like negative gossiping. You definitely have seen that here and there. And so it doesn't create that good environment where you feel safe and supported. You feel like you're entering a zone where you don't feel like you belong. So that belonging key plays a huge role. So what is the second step now?
The second step is to hire a security team and to do, you know, because hiring the right people is everything. We've got all kinds of automation. We've got like super advanced SIEMs, which are, as you know, security information event management systems. We've got all kinds of great technology and the AI behind it, but no matter how advanced our AI gets and how much automation you can introduce into a company's network, you still need the right human beings. So that's step 2. And there are a lot of, harmful misconceptions about hiring cybersecurity people. And I combat that in step two, like the mythical cybersecurity skills gap, for instance.
Oh, I cannot stand that one.
No.
Do you mind sharing like maybe one or two of best practices when it comes to hiring that you touch on in the book?
Definitely. First of all, I mentioned that, and that's a really controversial idea to a lot of hiring managers and HR people, but if a role truly is entry level, maybe consider hiring people who have no certs and no credentials and no prior industry experience, and invest in training those people. A lot of these certifications are really great, but the training is expensive and writing the exams are expensive. Shouldn't a company be the one footing the bill for an exam that costs several thousand dollars to write, instead of some, poor kid out of school? That's a major barrier to entry right there.
Yeah, I think it's frustrating when you hear companies talk about, oh, we're looking for people that are curious and want to explore how things work and have this interest into the micro details of things. And we want to hire those folks. But for entry-level job, you must have 3 to 5 years of experience. It's like, well, why are we still using the term entry-level at this point? And sometimes I wonder if it has something to do with the pay. Like they don't want to pay people. And I think that's kind of like the usual thing, but they don't want to state that. And that can be really frustrating to get around, especially to get into our industry.
Definitely. And I think it's very important to have people at a variety of different experience levels and age groups. So you have older, more experienced security practitioners mentoring the younger people. And at the same time, younger people bring a fresh viewpoint and a fresh way of thinking. So I like to see a diversity of age groups and experience levels in an organization, definitely.
I agree on that. So let's jump into the third step.
Regulatory compliance. This one will really hit a company's bottom line. Like, people were freaking out about the GDPR when information started coming out about it in 2017 and when it was made law in 2018. But there are lots of other like really important data privacy regulations. Some are industry or function specific, like PCI DSS or Sarbanes-Oxley. And you shouldn't count on regulatory compliance as being a security baseline. You should definitely go beyond what you need to do in order to comply with regulations, but start with complying with regulations though, because fines can be multi-millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. If you're in bad standing with with the Payment Card Industry Association, you might not be able to take credit cards as a method of payment. You don't want, HIPAA violation fines. So it's not a baseline, but definitely look into all of the data privacy regulations that pertain to your organization and have a plan to make sure that you're complying with them properly.
You're here on that. I think, do you think that's when you were writing this chapter or about this step in particular, did you ever have conversations with some companies where it seemed like they just thought that they would never get caught?
I have heard horror stories from CISOs and security analyst types. I haven't had a lot of the kind of discussions that a CISO would have between, the non-technical executives, but I've spoken to so many CISOs over the years, and I can see why they're really stressed out sometimes. Fortunately, I was able to glean a lot of great advice from CISOs in this book. I interviewed at least a dozen different CISOs. So this is mainly a pain point for CISOs when, you know, other executives are like, oh, well, you know, we'll never get caught, but you will get caught. It's inevitable.
Yeah. So what's the fourth step?
The fourth step is frequent security testing. And this can help when it comes to designing proper security baselines as well. All organizations of all sizes in all industries should engage in frequent security testing. All organizations are ready for vulnerability assessments. So as you know, vulnerability assessments are based on a specific security standard that would be relevant to your organization based on its industry or what kind of work that you do. So definitely have vulnerability assessments at least, you know, once or twice a year. And then we move on to pen testing. And pen testing is more useful for organizations with a moderate or high security maturity level. And I get into the concept of security maturity in that chapter as well. There's a lot of misconceptions about pen testing. There are a lot of, you know, there are vendors that I've heard that have tried to sell pen testing as being sexier and better than a vulnerability assessment when really they're just two different types of security tests and one isn't better than the other. It serves a different function. And, you know, and pen testing is not right for all organizations because if an organization has very low security maturity, a pen test will be useless and destructive, right? So I get into that. I also get into bug bounties. Bug bounties are great for companies that develop software that have a large user base and have, you know, at least moderate to high security maturity and have a system for triaging bug reports. You know, it's a great way to make sure that your applications are more secure. But just like pen testing, not all software developers are appropriate for bug bounty programs. So I get into that as well. Like those are, and then I get into security audits, and security audits are something that are done to organizations instead of done by organizations. So security audits are largely about regulatory compliance in the previous chapter. So you at least need to be ready for them. You know, just like a restaurant needs to be ready for the idea that their health and safety could be audited at any time, or a financial organization should be ready for a tax audit at any time. You should be ready for a security audit at any time.
I just think of the mystery shopper idea just came through my mind on that one. I'm also, when you said bug bounty, my whole face just smiled completely. All right. So what is the fifth step?
Security framework application. So this is about preparing to build your, you know, your CCERT, your incident response team. So as you know, there are, you know, at least a few different popular cybersecurity frameworks these days. The NIST cybersecurity framework is the most popular of them, but there's also COBOL, and there's other ones that I cover in that chapter as well. And so if an organization doesn't know how to plan their incident response policies, maybe starting with one of those frameworks is a good starting point. So all these frameworks go into the different phases of incident response, from being prepared to being able to observe indications of compromise when they occur, to being able to respond quickly to either prevent or mitigate a cyber threat, depending on what's going on in the cyber attack chain. And yeah, that's a crucial blue teaming defensive security concept these days, is having an incident response plan.
Hear. I do know that not all organizations have up-to-date incident response plans or even have incident response plans. I remember seeing like this statistic from the, I think it was Pullman Institute, But I said like 73% of organizations don't have an incident response plan, or it's ad hoc style when they are dealing with a breach. And I just remember hearing that and I'm just like, wait, what?
Would not surprise me in the slightest. Like that's directly connected to orgs not having security budgets.
Right. So. Not until they have a breach. No, just, but honestly, it's pretty true still. So what's the sixth step?
The sixth is controlling your data assets. So this is where I introduced the CIA triad, which we're all very familiar with, access control and patch management. It's very important to, because one of the audiences that I've designed this book for are non-technical business people. So I introduce malware and cryptography, the importance of physical security, because physical security is very often overlooked when people are learning about cybersecurity, data loss prevention, MSPs, the impact of the dark web on the cyber threat landscape. Because I think that is like one of the major issues now, is all this planning and selling malware and cyber attack as a service, being able to be done in a more covert fashion, which also makes deploying cyber attacks a lot more convenient. Because if you don't have to develop exploit kits or malware, et cetera, from scratch, then deploying cyber attacks becomes so much easier. So that's mainly what step six is about.
Love it. What's the seventh step?
Understanding the human factor. So just like physical security gets overlooked, the human aspect of cybersecurity gets overlooked. So social engineering is a big thing. It's a component in most cyber threats. Cyber attackers find that the easiest, most feasible entry point into a network is to first fool a human being, whether it's phishing or vishing or Trojans. It's much easier to fool a human being to get access to a system because, these people are targeted because they already have privileged access. Trying to, brute force your way in completely is a hell of a lot more difficult. So definitely understand social engineering and phishing. A common misconception is that people like us, cybersecurity professionals, aren't vulnerable to phishing and to other social engineering exploits, but that couldn't possibly be further than the truth. We're being targeted more often because of our arrogance, assuming that we can't be fooled. And also the more privileged access that we have in these networks. So even, I, someone with a CISSP still needs to have the mindset that they can be fooled. So yeah. The moment that we think that we're too smart to be fooled is the moment we become more susceptible to being fooled.
This is very much true on all those levels in many, many ways. Okay, so what is the final and eighth step?
Building redundancy and resilience. We, over the course of my career, there's been a massive adoption of cloud platforms, which I think is largely a very positive trend. It gives organizations a much easier way to build redundancy and resiliency in their networks, because you don't have to host all this stuff on premises anymore. And also there's scalability. So if you need double the capacity or 50% of the capacity in storage and bandwidth overnight, it's much easier to do with a cloud platform than doing it on premises. So I talk about how you should back up your data as much as possible. You should have redundant systems. You should have backups in your network so that if one segment of your network goes down, you've got others to pick up the slack. I go into business continuity and disaster recovery. and also keeping local backups, because it's great to have lots of backups within your cloud services, but you also need to prepare for the idea that maybe you lose connectivity with your cloud services, or maybe recovering from your cloud backups might take longer than backing up locally. So I wrote the chapter with the assumption that you can get a lot out of using cloud services properly, but also make sure that you have resiliency on your premises as well, even if it means having, you know, RAID configurations where you just keep your most vital data backed up.
And also the whole disaster recovery, that is a very much real situation. I think our industry is finally coming out of that whole thing. Like, you could, a breach won't happen to you if good security. At the end of the day, it's like, a breach is going to happen. You just don't know when.
Or, you know, even the best, you know, even the best intrusion prevention system and the most rock solid doors on, you know, in your data center is not going to prevent all of your computers from being damaged in a flood.
Yeah, exactly. So was there any other steps or any aspects that you wish that you included in the book?
That's a good question. I don't really think I've had enough time to reflect on whether or not there were any voids in my book. I do, in chapter 9, I do give readers a summary of the most important points that I made in each of the 8 steps, plus further reading, because there is no way that I can cover everything that someone needs to know about business cybersecurity in a 217-page book. This is your starting point. This is your business cybersecurity 101. So I also mention books that people can read so that they can learn more about each of the major topics that I cover. So I think that that's really important. So it's designed to really be, you know, baby's first business cybersecurity book, because I even explain where to go from here.
And that's what's kind of needed now. It could be that go-to book that anytime someone reaches out, like, hey, I was wondering if you could mentor or tell me a little bit how to go about this. Now I just like, have you heard of this person named Kim Crawley? She wrote a book, 8 steps. I think it might be good for you. Read it, then come back, which would be a fabulous thing. What are some takeaways that you want readers to have, or what are you hoping this book will bring about for the industry and even outside the industry?
I hope it changes a lot of attitudes. Like, we're all super frustrated at, you know, companies not having a security budget until they're hit by ransomware or a major data breach, or companies that lack incident response plans. I was under the impression that a lot of business people have a lot of misconceptions about cybersecurity, so I try my best to address them so that they can have the right headspace about this stuff. I also mentioned frequently in the book that if you hire the right people, those people can help you in all of these areas, because you can't do it on your own. You need people with knowledge and experience. So yeah, and this is a very personal book, because even though the subject matter might seem really impersonal, this book really has my personality in it. And I go into some tangents about stuff like NFTs, for instance. So I tried to make it fun and interesting. Oh, yeah, I go on like a couple of rambles about video game technology and stuff like that. So it's not a dry book, but it is very much a book that people will love or hate, depending on whether or not they like my personality.
I love reading people's tangents. I think that's where you really get a grasp. You go down like this foxhole that just like keeps going on forever. It's one of my favorite things when I like come across that in any book. So my next question for you is, What will be the next book coming from you, potentially?
That's a great question. I worked with O'Reilly. You know how O'Reilly constantly works with tech companies to produce small free ebooks, which correlate with the tech company's area of specialization. So we've seen on Twitter and LinkedIn and places like that ads for, you know, a book that Confluent did with O'Reilly and IBM. And I did one with JumpCloud, which is on IT for a distributed workforce. And that's a 50-page free ebook that should be out in the next couple of months. Because, you know, and then that reflects how our industry is changing, how the pandemic has changed how a lot of companies do business. Because I think it's a great thing to allow a lot more people to work from home if it's possible, but you need the technology that makes that feasible. And JumpCloud has a lot of experience with that because they develop cloud directory services. So I was really proud. I worked very closely with the JumpCloud team on that one. The next book will either be an O'Reilly title or a Wiley title. We'll see how it goes. I kind of want to take a break for a couple of months when it comes to writing books.
That's understandable.
I'm really, really proud of my work with Hack the Box. I started working with them in April. Honestly, it's really good to have a solid job with a salary. It's made my career and my life a lot more stable. And Hack the Box is a really cool, relatively young tech company, really innovative. They really pioneered the whole online hacking training market. You know, we provide the, you know, the virtualized networks and the virtual machines that people need to test a lot of these pen testing techniques themselves. And it's a great way to learn. And we also have HTTP Academy, where we have interactive courses on a wide range of cybersecurity topics. I've developed an HTTP Academy course that will be coming out in the next couple of months that I'm really proud of. So that segment of the company is growing really quickly too. But for the most part, I run Hack the Box's new blog. And that is really cool. So I'm not working on, you know, 10 different tech company blogs anymore like I used to. When it comes to blogging, I'm really focused on Hack the Box now. And they've been absolutely wonderful to work with. So
excellent.
Yeah.
And then so I always ask the guests when they come on, what are some things that you wish that the community would do to change how it is today? And this could be for the users in the community, it could be the hacker community, it could be CISOs, it could be anyone, but just what are a couple or maybe one thing that you wish that people would roll up their sleeves to do? What is your call to action, in other words?
There needs to be more people to bridge the gap between business people and computer nerds. And, you know, CISOs largely play that role, but we need more people playing that role to get business people to care about cybersecurity and to learn how to communicate with them properly so that we can get these security budgets that they are the gatekeepers to. I think that's really, really important. We need to rethink security hiring, definitely. That's something that I address in the book. We need to be an industry that's more open and welcoming to women and non-binary people and to people of, you know, all races and ethnicities and disabled people. And you name it, we need to be a lot more open-minded about what a hacker looks like. You know, the more diversity that we have in our industry, the better. Our industry will be so much stronger when we have a diversity of genders and age groups and, you know, disability. that will all make our industry stronger. Just be a lot more open-minded about hiring would be a really important step in our field, definitely.
Hear, hear on that. If I could, I would raise a glass on that one. Well, thank you, Kim, so much for being on the podcast today. And everyone, check out her book. The ebook is already out. The hard copy, or should I say the paperback version, will be coming out on October 5th and pretty much all the bookstores. So check it out. And thank you again, Kim, for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Change Making Podcast with Chloe Mestaghi. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.